I'm your host, Julia Cardoso, and welcome to Anxious Ramblings. Here we're going to speak about all the crazy thoughts in your head that you're afraid to say out loud. Before I get into this episode's topic, I'd like to tell you guys about an interview I had on the Anxiety Guru Show podcast by Paul Dooley. So in this episode, titled Bouncing Back from Panic, Paul interviewed me about my struggles with anxiety and what I went through this past year. And if you'd like to listen to this podcast, you can find it on iTunes, and it's the Anxiety Guru Show, and the podcast is called Bouncing Back from Panic. You can also check out his blog at anxietyguru.net. So for this episode, I'd like to talk about fear. Fear is a powerful and primitive human emotion. It alerts us to the presence of danger. Fear can be divided into two stages, biochemical and emotional. The biochemical response is universal, while the emotional response is highly individualized. So what I want you guys to do right now is get out a piece of paper and a pen. And I want you to write down your top three fears. I did this the other day. Let me share what I had. My first fear was definitely the future. And a lot of my anxieties definitely came for this. And I realized actually that fear is the root of my anxiety and what has made me to become this anxious person. And what I fear from the future is just growing up and not knowing what to do with my life, not knowing if I'm going to make the right choices or if something bad is going to happen to anyone I love or if anything is going to happen in life that I'm not going to be prepared for. I just kept overanalyzing all these different scenarios of things that may happen, may not happen. And this has allowed my anxiety to worsen. Another fear that I had was not living up to expectations, not being the person that everyone wants me to be, not making people happy and having people mad at me. I really feared that. And another fear that really stood out to me and definitely had the greatest impact on my anxiety was the fear of death. And I feel like something that deepened that fear was not having a religious outlet or not having a spiritual connection to really turn to deal with those emotions. And I realized that I feared being nothing when I died, being forgotten and lost forever, and not having a religious outlet, like I said, definitely played a huge role in the way I reacted to those fears. And all of these fears definitely played a huge role in my anxiety, and these fears came to life, my anxiety just snowballed and got worse and worse, and I wasn't doing anything about it. But you definitely can. So I want you to look at the list you just wrote down and think about if they had an effect on your mental health. Is it negative? Is it positive? How does these fears impact your mental health? I definitely can see how at first these fears have impacted my anxiety in a negative way because I wasn't aware of them. But now being aware and being able to transform my fears definitely can make them into something positive. One way that I learned to transform my fears is that realizing that these fears, anxieties, and worries are all results of my thoughts. And they're all constructed over what's going on in my mind. One way that I transformed the fear was not believing in these thoughts, not believing that this is real and that I'm really going to die and this panic attack is really going to hurt me, and just letting these thoughts go in my mind without reacting to them, without feeding the emotion, feeding the anxiety, feeding the worry. And the more I felt the fear in my body, I was able to detach my mind from these attachments to these fears. So, for example, I'd get panic attacks where I just wanted to run home. Like I said before, not avoiding the panic attacks, not avoiding the fear, definitely made it easier for me to deal with the next time it came around. Another way that I learned to transform the fear was to be present in the moment. And this has definitely been something that I learned through mindfulness practice, that being in the present moment now can allow you to not worry about things that's going to happen in the future or may not even happen. So right now I'm sitting down in my dorm room recording this podcast. I don't care what's going to happen tomorrow. I'm not even thinking about that. I don't care what's going to happen 5 months from now because I'm not there. I'm right here and I'm right now. And thinking about those things aren't going to make them happen and aren't going to make them not happen. And it's basically useless to even worry about them because there's nothing I can do about it. I can't control my future. I can control right now. And this is what I'm going to do. Another way that I learned to transform my fear is to replace it with something positive. So I have anxiety. I'm an anxious person. I fear everything. I fear going out in public and being in crowds. I fear going to class and sitting there. I fear a lot of things. I even fear my own anxiety. And one way that I transformed this into something positive was to take care of my health and reaching out to other people with anxiety and trying to make this into something that's going to benefit me in the future by creating this podcast and just doing anything that's going to make this anxiety into something that is good. And I feel like you can apply this to any one of your fears. And lastly, but definitely the hardest, is to face your fears. And this is something that is hard to do, but facing your fear is so beneficial to your mental health. It gives you a sense of empowerment and motivation, and you feel like you can tackle anything. Every time that I accomplished something that was really hard for me and that really gave me anxiety, I just felt like I can conquer the world and like I can do anything. So I'm going to end this by reading a quote that I found that really stood out to me. "Bless you for your fear. It is a sign of wisdom. Do not hold yourself in fear. Transform the energy to flexibility and you'll be free from what you fear." And this is from the book, The Way Ahead. For the next part of the episode, I'd like to play for you a conversation I had with Danielle. She's 21. She's from California. She struggled with an eating disorder and depression. And we're going to talk about her internal acceptance movement. And I just want to say thank you to Danielle for allowing me to share your story. And I hope you guys enjoy it. Can you explain what internal acceptance movement is and why you started it?
Yeah. So the basic idea behind the internal acceptance movement is that as human beings, we aren't defined by anything external. We aren't defined by our weight, our body shape, our skin color, our ethnicity, our sexuality, where we come from, how much money we make, what school we go to, our career, but that it's rather the internal things, our character and our attitude and our goals and morals and dreams and how we treat other people that is really self-defining. And I came up with the idea for I Am back in the summer of 2009, and it was when I was in treatment for my eating disorder, which at the time was bulimia, and I was in a body image group, and we were asked to go through magazines and pick certain articles and kind of remake them so that they weren't so disordered. And for whatever reason, that made me realize that I wanted to do something in the area of eating disorders and body image and spread awareness. And that slowly transformed into the internal acceptance movement. And initially, it was very much centered on eating disorders and eating disorder awareness. But when I made a Tumblr, I decided that I wanted I Am to become something more and be something that people who didn't have eating disorders only could resonate with. So it's now transformed into something much more about self-acceptance and recovery from any addiction or self-esteem issue. And it's really just about making peace with who you are and recognizing that you're enough and that you aren't alone in the things that you're going through and that you can get better and don't have to do it alone.
Yeah, that's one of the reasons why I wanted to talk to you, is because I've seen, like, I followed you, and every single post that you've had, I can really relate to it and, like, really use it to challenge my thoughts and about my own recovery with anxiety. So I definitely like the fact that it's able to be used in every part of someone's life. And
definitely.
Yeah. You said that you use self-care techniques.
Yeah.
What are some things that have been really helpful in your recovery so far?
I think this does apply for food, but I think the first thing is what helped me was allowing myself to eat whatever my body was craving. And I think this is something that even people don't, without eating disorders, struggle with, this idea that there are certain foods that are good and there are certain foods that are bad, and we end up denying ourselves these things, but that inevitably leads to a binge, because when you don't let yourself eat things, then you feel deprived, and then you get ravenous, and then you just want to eat that food.
Exactly.
So it was a big thing, was just ignoring these rules about food. And if I was craving ice cream, I was going to let myself eat ice cream. If I wanted pie, I was going to eat pie. And when you let yourself eat these foods that you've deemed forbidden, they no longer feel like forbidden foods. They're just normal foods, and they don't have that power anymore. So that was the first thing that really helped me break the binging and purging cycle.
So you said you challenge your negative thoughts and beliefs?
Yeah. So a lot of it is really talking back to that negative voice. So let's say I'm feeling like I'm worthless. And instead of just trying to ignore that thought, I think it's really helpful to imagine that somebody's saying that to you and really think about how you can, like, counter that thought. And sometimes it's really hard in the moment to be nice to yourself when those thoughts feel really true. So something that I do is I pretend that I have a friend who's feeling that way, and I think about what I say to them, and then I apply it to myself. And it feels silly in the moment, and even if you don't believe the things that you're saying to counter those negative thoughts, I think it's so important to still talk back voice, because every time you do, you're taking away some of their power and entertaining the notion that maybe those thoughts aren't true, and it helps you reclaim some of your own power. So that's a big one.
I can definitely agree with that one, especially like because I feel like a lot of the times it's so much easier to just avoid the try to avoid or ignore them, but challenging them can really make you learn how to handle it when it comes again. So I can definitely agree with that.
And as far as anxiety goes, and especially because you shared that anxiety is something you struggle with, something that's helped me is kind of playing out my fears. Like today even, I was anxious about having this phone call. Mm-hmm. I'm really introverted, and phone calls are really scary for me. And something that helps me is I kind of ask myself, okay, I'm really scared about doing this thing. Like, what is the worst thing that could happen?
Yes.
Because when we feel anxious, we just build it up in our head, and it feels like this really huge, scary thing, but we make it out to be worse than it actually is.
Exactly.
So I feel like a lot of the times, when you play out the worst thing that can happen, it helps you realize that whatever you're scared of really isn't that scary or that bad. And it helps me today. So, definitely. Yeah, that's something that I still use for anxiety. Another thing that has helped me with my recovery is talking about the things that I feel ashamed of or that I felt ashamed of. And I feel like shame is a big thing with a lot of people. It's really painful. And the thing about shame is that it keeps you sick when you keep it a secret. Like, it just feeds that shame.
Definitely.
And I'm a big believer in this idea that in order to really heal from anything, we have to talk about the things that we feel ashamed of. Because that's what kills that shame, is breaking that silence and sharing that need you have, and recognizing that these things you feel ashamed of aren't really bad, and that it doesn't mean that you have to feel ashamed of yourself. So I don't know if that's something you could relate with, but
definitely.
Yeah.
I feel like you said, like, talking about the things that you're ashamed of, it can really just help you to just open up to your, not only to others, but just to yourself. Because a lot of times when you hold it in, it destroys you, and
Totally.
Just being honest with yourself first can definitely have a huge impact on your mental health. What can you tell someone who is struggling with an eating disorder and depression right now? Like, what would you say to them if they were listening?
I would say that that this doesn't have to be your life. That I know that things feel so hard right now, and that things seem hopeless, and it feels like you're never going to get better. And I've been in that place, and I know what it feels like. I was really sick for five, six years, and was in treatment in and out 10 times before things started finally getting better. But if I had given up at any point along that journey, I would have never gotten to this place that I'm at now. So my advice would be that you can't give up. It doesn't matter if you struggle or lapse. The people who get better are the people who don't give up.
Exactly.
I would say that you deserve to reach out for help and ask for support, because this is your life and it's worth saving, and you are too important and too wonderful to spend the rest of your life as a prisoner to your eating disorder.
Thanks again, Danielle. You just had such a positive light to you, and I can definitely sense it as soon as we started talking. And just continue doing what you're doing, because you're definitely helping a lot of people, and I know you're going to do such wonderful work. Thanks so much. So I'm going to end this podcast by reading some responses from a question that I posted on my blog. The question is, how has fear impacted your mental illness? The first response is from an anonymous follower, and they write, "Fear is a wide-ranging ocean with waves as tall as mountains that sound like a dragon's prideful roar. And I'm a broken rowboat at its mercy. Some days I sail to an island, but some days I'm capsized and drowned in a sea of pain and despair." Another follower writes, "How has fear impacted my mental health? I'm almost 22 and I haven't done nearly half the things I thought I'd do by this age. Fear is a controlling factor of my life with anxiety." Another anonymous follower writes, "Fear has paralyzed me and caused me to never go outside of my comfort zone. It has stripped me of opportunities and a chance to be the person I've always wanted to be." Lastly, "Fear has made my relationship with anyone difficult. They don't understand. Some get angry, some think you're not worth their time. When really, I'm trapped in a bubble of fear, screaming for someone to understand and to help me. Fear has made me lonely." So I'd like to thank everyone who made this episode possible. I'd like to thank my audio consultant, Jean, my music composer, Elise, my Tumblr followers, those who answered this week's question, and I'd also like to thank Danielle again. I will place her contact information in the podcast description if anyone else has any questions for her or if you want to check out her blog. And if you have any comments or thoughts about this episode or how I can improve for future episodes, you can contact me at anxietysurvivor@gmail.com, and I'm also at Twitter at anxiousurvivor. For the next episode, I'm going to talk about how to handle back-to-school anxieties. Thank you all for listening. Hope you all tune in next time.